Okay, we're ready to call the Fish and Game Commission meeting to order. Does that work? I guess it does. My name is Jim Kellogg. I'm president of the commission and, from Concord. To my left is vice president of the commission, Michael Flores from Sacramento. And we better turn off our phones here. Left to him is Bill Cunningham from the AG's office, our legal counsel. And left to Bill is Sherry Cole from our staff. Left to Sherry is John Fisher, assistant executive director. And left of John is Adriana Shea from our staff as well. To my right is Bob Trainer, our executive director. And right of Bob is our brand new, and we welcome you, Commissioner Richard Rogers from Carpinteria. And right of Richard is Bob Hattoy, commissioner from Santa Monica. And right of Bob is Paul Stein, deputy director with the department. And next to Paul is Sonke Master, deputy director with the department. We also have with us today Warden Clint Garrett in the back. And I'm happy I get to make this announcement. We have with us as well Warden Nancy Foley, who just yesterday, I believe it was appointed the brand new Chief of Enforcement, replacing Tom Pedersen, who is retired for the department.
I believe she's the first woman to hold that position.
Yeah. I think so, yeah. The very first female chief we've had in the history of the department. Congratulations to you, Nancy. Okay, before we get into our agenda items, we have a presentation we want to make. We have our recently retired commissioner who served as vice president during his term on the commission that we want to make a presentation to. So, Sam Shookit, if you would step up front here and we'll... Says that this commission hereby recognizes and honors Sam Shookit for his valuable contribution to the decision-making process in protecting and enhancing our state's fish and wildlife, both game and non-game, and their habitats. And further be it resolved that you always be afforded ample opportunity to enjoy the thrill and exhilaration of bird watching, backpacking, or bike riding. And finally be it resolved that the Fish and Game Commission will miss your problem-solving ability and thought-provoking questions, and wishes you and your lovely wife, Leanna, the best in your future endeavors, and that the friendship that you have acquired while on the commission remain forever. Sam, we really do miss you. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. In addition to that, we've got a beautiful... Beautiful belt buckle that outgoing commissioners received, and it got your name on it, and the term, and the whole ball of wax.
That's beautiful.
And we want to hear you respond to all this
stuff
right now.
Well, unaccustomed as I am to public speaking, Bob called me up a few months ago, Bob Traynor, and said, we usually give a belt buckle to outgoing commissioners, do you want that? And I guess he was thinking, well, you know, guy lives in Oakland, kind of urban liberal, why would he want a big belt buckle? Of course I want the belt buckle, I said. I earned it, 5 years. It's beautiful. Look at this. You'll get one of these too. Yeah,
Sam.
It's beautiful. Look at that. Look at that. Yeah. I really.
Let me just show it to the other.
I'll show it to the other commissioners. Yeah, they have something to look forward to. That's right. I really enjoyed serving with y'all. It was an honor. And I see a lot of my buddies from the general public here, and I really enjoyed listening to all of you over the years. One thing... I've been in the process of sort of saying goodbye to folks, and I've written some of you notes and letters. And one group of people that I hadn't gotten around to thanking formally yet, but I want to take the opportunity to do so now, is the staff of the commission and the staff of the department. It was just a joy to work with all of you for the last 5 years. You labor long and hard under often difficult circumstances. The vast majority of the people in the Department of Fish and Game are folks like me who love the outdoors and who love nature and somehow thought that working in Fish and Game, they'd get to spend a lot of time with the outdoors and nature, and then discovered that it was really all about, you know, cranking out EIRs and going to consensus meetings and writing regulations. But what you do matters a great deal. It mattered a great deal to me, and I wanted to thank all of you for your service and let you know that I really am going to miss all of you. I have the great good fortune to continue to be involved in resource issues since I run the Coastal Conservancy, and I'll probably see a lot of you in Sacramento on Monday at the first meeting of the Ocean Protection Council. But serving on this commission was, without question, a high point of my life. I hope that I accomplished some good things. I notice on your agenda tomorrow that you have the first receipt of SURFS data. Obviously, you waited until I was off before you got that system fully operational, but... that's the kind of thing that I love to see. Happen, and I'm going to miss all of you. So, thank you, very much, and thank you for the opportunity to serve. Now, let me have my belt buckle back.
With that, we'll move to the first item on today's agenda.
Our first item is the receipt of public comments under public forum. This agenda item is scheduled to allow members of the public to provide comments to the commission on items that are not on the agenda for the current meeting. Each member of the public will be provided up to 3 minutes to provide their comments, at which time the commission then can schedule that issue for a future commission meeting and or ask the department for a response to whatever issue was raised. Our first speaker will be Walt Manzel, followed by Mike Tanaka.
Mr. President, members of the Commission, Department staff, I'm Walt Mansell, representing the California Rifle and Pistol Association. I just want to bring up a matter that's been of concern to us for some time, and it applies not just to the Fish and Game Department, to but to virtually all public agencies, local, state, and federal. They have a habit of acquiring land through whatever reasons or through whatever means, money from propositions, money from donated from concerned citizens and everything else, and then they lock the land up until such time as management plans are developed and funds are available to staff the land for whatever purpose it was acquired. There has to be a more reasonable alternative to allow the public to continue to access or to newly access the public lands. It says over here on the mission of the department to develop partnerships for wildlife management. We feel the department and other agencies as well could work better to develop local partnerships with sportsmen's clubs, youth clubs, civic organizations, and individual volunteers to help staff some of these small parcels, small wildlife areas, serve as docents, maintenance workers, whatever, to get some of these things opened so the public can start enjoying them. I know the department makes a great effort in many, many areas, but you're very short-staffed in the management people available. Some regional wildlife managers have numerous parcels that they're responsible for, scattered over a very broad area. And we feel that you could develop these partnerships with people on a local basis that would help get them available, not necessarily for hunting, but for nature viewing, for picnicking, for fishing, for whatever the land will provide. We don't advocate hunting on the two-acre parcel at the edge of town, obviously. The state park system somehow or other has solved whatever the liability problems are. They use a lot of docents around the state in their parks, and somehow or other they've got that figured out. We're not advocating these people be law enforcement officers, just people to help out in whatever way they can. We thank you very much for the opportunity to just say a few words on this.
Thank you.
And Mike Tanaka, followed by Bob Strickland.
Okay. Good morning to you all. I'm here to represent, for the present time, myself. But be assured that I won't be the last voice that you hear about what I'm about to bring up. Just recently, the Department of Fish and Game has changed the manner in which they have managed a fishery in Carlsbad, California. And the fishery that I'm speaking of is the Agua Hedionda Lagoon. Now, it's taken probably a couple years, of which I only have maybe 1 year of experience with this lagoon in particular, but it's taken a couple of years for this full transition to occur, and just recently, this past month, the department has taken the final and last step that has really gotten things fired up enough for me to drive 600 miles to talk to you this morning. So, Agua Hedionda, Carlsbad, California. It's the place where the California or the white sea bass hatchery for the state is. Okay. Now, this fishery has been fished for well over 50 years as ocean waters. And anybody that fishes there will let you know that, you know, they go down there, they make their bait, they fish, and basically the big game fish that they're fishing for is halibut. Well, for these 50 years that the Fish and Game has just come down and basically checked licenses, checked size limits, checked take limits, and that was it. Now, we had no actual indication that they had something else that was going on. And apparently in the last year or so, they've decided to change the way they manage the enforcement of the lagoon. So, in other words, we've been fishing the place as ocean waters the entire 50 or so years. They have come up and said that this place is what they term inland waters. And they use this definition of any waters upstream from the mouth of coastal streams or rivers. Well, the situation that we're talking about has three distinct bodies of water that are entered into this. You have the Pacific Ocean, you have Agua Hedionda Lagoon, and then you have a small, little, tiny, dry creek that comes into the back of that lagoon, about 2 miles inland. Now, they're saying that because that creek is there, that this body of water is inland waters. Okay, well, that may well be by their definition, but we contend that this little creek actually meets sea level and the ocean at the back of the far eastern lagoon. And that's where the mouth of this little river is. So the lagoon system is not upstream from anything. It's actually connected to the ocean on the coast there. And I guess the configuration of the lagoon has been built up originally, a little over 50 years ago, by the city of Carlsbad in conjunction with San Diego Gas and Electric. And the mouth of the lagoon was protected with jetties and such so as to keep the lagoon open and fresh ocean water continuously feeding into the lagoon to cool the generators at the power plant. Okay. Well, this sort of situation was just fine and dandy, and everybody was happy as, pigs in the slop. But recently they've decided that they wanted to enforce this place as inland waters. Okay. Well, by doing so, they even state right here, he says, I have a letter here from the regional manager, and he actually says, the lagoon may well have been fished as ocean waters, but it may have been fished as ocean waters in contravention of the California freshwater sport fishing regs, but it has never been managed as such. And, you know, it's our opinion that, well, it certainly has been managed differently than the California regs are, because now they're trying to enforce those regs, and by the usage of those regs, they have closed the lagoon to the usage of live bait. And that is the main issue that I'm here about. Because basically, if they're going to use the inland water regs and freshwater regs and stick to those specifically, the problem comes up with, and that's where you guys come into this, because you are the source of the regs. You guys write the regs. So the problem is freshwater regulations do not specify any ocean fish because they don't live inland waters. These are all saltwater fish that live in the ocean and in this lagoon. This lagoon is all ocean water. It comes in daily, 24/7. In fact, the hatchery would not be there if it weren't ocean waters. There's also a mussel farm in there. That farm could not exist if it wasn't ocean waters. All of the game fish in there are ocean fish, and yet they want to regulate it as if it's a trout stream. So all we're asking is that you could change this designation, and basically all of the problems would disappear overnight just by simply saying that this is ocean waters, just like you've been fishing for the last 50 years. If you just stick to that, then all of the problems and gripes would go away. Short of that, at least the commission could write some regs into the freshwater regs that address the realities of this saltwater body. In other words, they could address the fact that top smelt, which is the natural forage in the lagoon, sardines and anchovies, which occasionally come in when they get chased in by the bonita and other game fish, are three species of finfish which have been traditionally used for the past 50 years in that lagoon to fish. And if the regs would actually specify and address that, then Fish and Game would not have these silly arguments that those baits are not approved, because that's what they're using right now to stop us from using dip nets and bait traps and things of that nature, which in the California regs say are legal and are usable. But the fact that the smelt that live in the lagoon and the anchovies which come in and the sardines which are coming in, those things are not quote-unquote approved. And because of that, they're not allowing the usage of those things. And, in fact, one of the game wardens that actually patrols the lagoon has gone as far as to say that, we went around and around with them about the bait traps and saying, well, okay, so you're going to close it to live bait. So we'll use the traps, catch the smelt, and use them as dead bait. Then they turned around and said, well, this one guy in particular says that basically once the smelt enter the lagoon, they're no longer ocean fish. They become something else. and what else I don't know. But, and he can't really back that statement up other than to say that the only kind of fish that are ocean fish are fish taken in the ocean. And so as long as they have a borderline, which they claim is the beginning of this upland waters body, as long as that exists for them in their minds, then everything inside the lagoon is something other than ocean fish, even though you have to go to the ocean regs to see whether or not you can take a certain size fish or a number of fish in any particular day.
You're making a really good point, and the department has asked to respond, so I want to give them an opportunity.
Okay, sure.
We might have us fix
Mr. Tanaka, if you could provide us with a copy of that letter, first of all.
I would
like to see that, and then we'll follow up with our regional manager down there and find out what policies may have changed, and we'll certainly...
Well, the only policies that have changed has been the strict enforcement of freshwater regs.
Yeah, we need to follow up on that, and we'll certainly do that.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, because he claims right in the at the bottom of this letter, he claims that, you know, even though he says operational things are not his purview, but you know, to take it up with
the
commission,
to report back to us on where we're at on this thing, because it's obviously somebody's interpretation is messing the whole thing up.
Well, if the regs actually address the reality of the live bait that exists and the live bait that's been fished there for 50 years. If it would just put those little notations somewhere in the regs, then these guys would have no arguments with us. It's just the fact that the freshwater regs are written for freshwater bodies, and they only address freshwater fish.
Well, that
omission is the problem.
I don't think we need to change the printing. We need to change somebody's interpretation of how they're doing it.
To the bottom of it, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I do know that if it was ocean waters, that none of these problems. And believe me, I may be the first you've heard about, but you're going to hear from a lot more people because the season has not yet begun.
Commissioner Flores.
Yeah. Thank you for coming the distance that you did. I mean, this is exactly why we have our hearing, so we can hear from the public, so we can address issues.
I could tell you, I'm flabbergasted that I'm actually getting some kind of response because experience with this sorts of things
is known for taking action. So, Sankey, I wonder if you can answer. I don't know that Paul can, but do we have up and down the state? Obviously, we have, you know,
lagoons.
Quite a few lagoons. How do we?
They're all fished ocean waters.
Or
I can't answer this gentleman's concern. We do recognize John Ugertz with our marine region, who just, as you know, recently revamped all the marine ecological reserves to make it easier to understand. Was mentioning that a lot of these are considered ocean, part of the ocean waters. So we just need to look into this. This is the first time I've heard of this. So,
but normally a lagoon is considered a ocean fish.
John, why don't you have John? He's the expert here on this.
I'm going to talk, so I need to stand here.
Okay.
Hi, John Ugretz with the department's marine region. As I understand it, and I do think we need to look at the actual way the regulation is written, is that if it's tidally influenced, if it's below mean high tide line, then it is part of the marine region and part of the ocean waters. It sounds to me like we need to work with the individual and the other concerned parties and even potentially clarify that definition in Title 14 as to where the boundary between marine and inland lies. And I think as Sankey and Chief Deputy Director have made noted that we're very willing to work with them and come up with a solution for this.
All right. Thank you.
See, it's actually my understanding that this lagoon has never been addressed formally in any of the reg books, but this year it does come up in the ocean regs, and it basically is saying that there's a preserve there. Now, the preserve has always been marked and has been marked for a long, long time as a small portion of the far eastern lagoon at the far eastern end of it. And if, in fact, the lagoon is designated as some sort of a preserve, anything of east of I-5 would be not a problem, because 99% of the fishermen do not go back there because you basically have to have a boat to fish it. It's pretty much inaccessible. The only portion that actually is fished by 99% of the anglers is the far western lagoon, the lagoon that is open to the ocean. And that's where the fishing there takes care of, and that's where the access is.
Well, I think you've accomplished your mission. We're gonna fix this thing. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
Who can I give this to?
Give it to Paul.
Thank you.
you want a copy?
Yeah, she'll make copies.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I thank you for your time. The drive was worth it. I can tell you that right now. I mean, it was a long drive, but I feel justified in making it, and I feel good about it. Thanks.
Bob Strickland, followed by Carter Fickies.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Bob Strickland with United Anglers. My voice is again today. I'm here again about an issue that we went through, I think, in 2003 down in Long Beach, and that was about the perch south of San Francisco. And at that time, there was no data to say that the perch was in trouble. And they cut our limit from 25 to 5, or 20 to 5. And I came before you and asked to have south of San Francisco to have 12 perch because I knew you'd knock me down to 10. And Mr. Flores at that time told the department to give me back the perch because they couldn't give me a reason why I couldn't have it because there wasn't any data. So nothing's happened in 2 years. And I would like something to happen. Either they come up with some data that says that we're in trouble, or I would appreciate that the commission make an emotion to the department to give us back 5 perch. I guess that's it. I mean, this has been a 2-year process. It doesn't seem like much, but I have a lot of friends and a lot of people in my groups who fish the perch on the beach and enjoy it. And 5 perch, I know the department's getting a lot of tickets out because there's a lot of guys fishing with more than 5 perch. But the bait alone, the guys are buying, are paying $8 and $9 for bait to catch 5 perch. I would like to have the limit put back up to 10, leaving the red tail, which was a problem perch, the way it is, at 5 fish at 10.5 inches, and they've taken care of the bay with limits and seasons. And north of San Francisco, they had data, and they've handled that. But south of San Francisco hasn't been handled, and we don't have the perch, and I'd like to have the perch back. So I guess perch back.
Can you respond to that, Sonk?
Some perch back. You knew it was coming.
Remember, I thought the department did provide a response at one point, but honestly, I can't remember. What I could do...
I don't remember that.
Well, you weren't here.
My marine staff's not here to answer that question right now, but if the commission would allow me, when they arrive here, I could maybe have them respond.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, we would like that.
Because I asked them to be prepared, and fortunately, they're not here right now, so...
Yeah,
is that okay? I mean,
they'll all be
Bob,
here tomorrow.
I take it you're going to be here both days?
Yes.
I mean, is that reasonable?
Yeah.
All right.
You bet.
I will have a response.
Okay, thank you.
We'll try to get an answer for you, Bob.
Carter Fickies, followed by Gary Bradford.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Carter Fickies, Black Bass Action Committee. I'm here today representing thousands of bass anglers and tournament organizations. Our concern has to do with Section 230. We met with Fish and Game, I believe, about 2 weeks ago. There was probably 18 to 20 people in the room, stakeholders, and many from the Fish and Game. Two things came to light immediately. There would be no biological impact for what we ask, and there would be no enforcement problem for what we ask, and this was stated by now-retired Mr. Peterson. I have two gentlemen that are going to discuss some of the issues today that are going to follow me directly, and they're going to discuss why we need this section changed and the economical and social impact of this changed. Specifically, on annual and event tournament permits for black bass tournaments, we're asking for an exemption similar to the slot limit where we'd be allowed to catch our five fish, daily bag limit, and continue fishing. With that, I will turn it over to the rest of the folks. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gary Bradford, followed by Don Rayleigh.
Mr. President, commissioners, Mr. Director, and staff, my name is Gary Bradford. I'm president of the California Bass Federation. I'm from Canyon Lake, California, which is right next to Carlsbad. But I'm going to tell you, I'm not going to talk about that issue. I'm as president of the Federation, I'm up here speaking on behalf of my organization, FLW, BASS, which is our parent organization, and hundreds of bass clubs throughout the state of California that are members of our organizations. A recent error in the printing of the 2005 freshwater sport regulations brought these old regulations into focus about the possession of about five bass in possession and not, bass fishermen not being able to continue to fish. Bass organizations have been operating under a five-fish limit and culling, which I will explain a little bit later, for the last 30 years or more in the state of California, and have had no problems with Fish and Game or any other organization. On March 2nd, I, along with others, Carter and some other people, met with the Fish and Game Department to discuss our concern about the regulations, and we had a very productive meeting, and I think at the end of that meeting, we were all pretty much on the same page about what is good for our organizations and what's good for the bass fishery here in California. What we would specifically like to see, we would like to see a change in the regulation that allows for tournament fishermen who catch and release their fish live at the end of the tournament. This is very important. Bass fishing tournament organizations initiated this process of live release, and they did that to help preserve the species so that other people would be able to catch those bass later. A recent example of that is the tournament FLW just held up at Clear Lake, where they caught over 1,600 bass, and less than 1% of those bass perished. All the rest went back into the lake, lived for other people to catch. I want to explain culling a little bit to you. We catch and release our fish at the end of the tournament to continue fishing for bass after reaching. When a tournament angler catches a sixth fish, they immediately compare that fish to other fish in their live well. We have operating, I'm sure you know this, but we have operating live wells in the boat. We compare that fish to other fish in there, and then we put in, if it's larger, we put in the, or heavier, we put in the larger or heavier fish, and we take out the smaller fish and return it to the waters, which brings our fish in possession back to a five-fish limit. This change, the change that we're looking for, could be put into effect real easily by just allowing a variance for anybody who applies for a bass tournament permit from the Fish and Game to automatically be able to cull fish during that tournament, or they could have a variance where we actually filled out another form and applied for a variance to be able to cull for fish during a tournament. And every member of that tournament would then be given those papers to show that they are fishing in an organized permitted tournament and that they are allowed to cull. The amount of total weight for a five fish limit is a standard in the bass fishing industry across the United States. And it is also the standard that the bass fishing industry judges its competitors by. It is the standards that other anglers use to judge how they compare to those professional anglers. If I know so-and-so fished on Clear Lake and caught a 25-pound limit, and I'm not fishing a tournament, but I go out the next day and I fish and I can catch a 25-pound limit, it's like little kids hitting two home runs in a little league field or whatever and comparing themselves to major league ball players. Basically the same thing. The bass fishing industry, tournament industry, is a rapidly growing market across the United States and in other countries. That brings a huge economic impact to the communities where the tournaments are held. Tournament organizations like ESPN Bass and FLW hold tournaments that bring an economic impact to the community of up to $3.5 million California has many fisheries that have been used in the past and are being targeted for the future by these organizations. But if we cannot effect a change in these regulations, they may very well take their business elsewhere. I'm sure that this commission, I know we handed some in to you today, has received and will receive in the future some letters from some municipalities around the state who back our position in this because it means a lot of money coming into their community. Hopefully you will add this topic to your agenda and can institute a change in the very new future that will take care of the situation as it now stands. And we would also, as tournament organizations, like to invite any or all of you to come out and view one of our tournaments, view how the tournament process goes on. Fish, after they're weighed in, for most of these large tournaments, are put into what we call a live release boat that's either on the water, sometimes off the water, that is set up to hold numerous fish. Then they are taken out to another part of the lake and let go, and they're held in tanks and water all along the way. We're very responsive to the needs of the fish because we want to have them there to catch for future. We want to have them there for our kids to catch in the future. So thank you very much for your time.
I know we have one more speaker on this issue. I just want to thank you, first of all, for coming and speaking to us, and then just remind the commission that I myself, 3 or 4 years ago, put an item on the agenda about the number of tournament bass fishing tournaments that we have in the state. And since that time, of course, I told the commission at a later meeting that I'd found out additional information I wasn't aware of. And as most of you know, and for Rich, for your information, many, many of these tournaments are held in my backyard. and so I get to talk to the bass fishermen all the time. And we will get a report later on today from the department on this issue. And one of my questions is going to be how that culling item got highlighted in our regulations this year. Hopefully we can get things straightened out. With that, we'll entertain the next speaker.
Don Rayleigh, followed by Steve Shemek.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen of the commission. My name is Don Rayleigh, and I'm here representing today two different organizations, one the Lake County Chamber of Commerce and the Oroville Chamber of Commerce. I would like to read a letter. Melissa Fulton could not be here today. She's the executive director of the Lake County Chamber of Commerce, and she would like to have this read into the record. This is addressed to Mr. Kellogg. Dear Mr. Kellogg, I know you have received numerous communications on the state regulations concerning culling bass during tournaments in California. Please know that this organization, which represents just less than 600 business owners in Lake County, echoes these concerns. Lake County has an economy which is driven in many ways by tourism. Any issue which has the potential of a negative impact on our economy, such as the culling regulation, deserves our attention. I have been in contact with Congressman Mike Thompson's office over the past several weeks on this issue due to his personal knowledge of bass tournaments and his own concerns on the regulation. I am requesting on behalf of our members and businesses throughout Lake County his support and that of Senator Wes Chesbrough and the Assembly Member Petty Berg in supporting emergency legislation for immediate relief of this regulation in this state. Whatever affects our tourism industry has a huge trickle-down impact on every resident of Lake County, and the Chamber's mission is to protect our communities from any negative impacts. Your consideration of immediate relief from this regulation is urgently requested. Sincerely, Melissa Fulton, Executive Director. Now, I'm also here today representing the Oroville Chamber of Commerce. These two communities really mirror one another. We're in the extreme northern areas of the state. We struggle for every dollar that we get into our communities. For years, these two communities have been known as welfare areas. And we worked real hard to try to remedy that, to get out of that image and get into a more positive mode. One of the things that this commission done, Mr. Traynor can probably remember when we came here a few years back and asked for a similar exemption to the slot limit on Lake Oroville because it so negatively affected our tournaments that they couldn't be held there. Since you have done that, that's probably been one of the best things that the state has ever done for the city of Oroville. Our tournament industry had just gone through the roof. It's not doubled or quadrupled. It's just gone through the roof. And we track that very carefully through the TOT tax. That's the motel tax, heads in the beds. And you can see that on our graphs that the normal residency in the motels on the weekends are like 30% of occupancy or 30% of availability. When the tournaments are in town, they go to 90 to 100 plus. And that has become so successful in the town of Oroville that we pay our entire health and welfare benefits to our city workers and still have money left over. So you can see how just a negative or a positive thing can affect a small town tremendously. And we would like to thank you. We've never come back and done that to this commission. It was one of the best things that you've ever done for us. It's really been an economic boom. And it was done not out of necessity of a biological thing, which is the same thing as this culling rule. I've fished tournaments for 30 years. We've always had a no-cull rule. It's just never been enforced because it really wasn't necessary when it came to tournaments. And most of the wardens understood that, and they understood the financial impact that not having this ability to cull would cause. So they just chose not to do it. And maybe it's time to take it out of that gray area and put it into where if a warden feels that they should enforce something because it is a law. And I have no problem with that. I have no problem with this warden that recently issued this ticket that brought all this to light. They just thought they were doing their job. And they were. Technically, they were right. You can't fault anybody for that. And that's not what we're here for. We are just here to make sure that this doesn't negatively impact us. And I'd like to just give you one more example that just happened in Mr. Kellogg's area. Last week, they had an FLW tournament on Clear Lake, and Clear Lake has always had the potential to turn out huge limits. But because of this no-call rule, not wanting to cause any problems with the state, they went to a four-fish limit. A friend of mine, Sig Taylor, who lives in Kelseyville, won the tournament with 96 pounds, and that's a four-fish limit for 4 days. The world's record for a tournament weight came out of Florida, which was 108 pounds, but it was 4 days for five fish. Now, what happened as a result of this, just to show you how a negative impact can do, California should be now the big bass capital of the world. We should have garnered millions of dollars in airtime, television time, money that you couldn't buy that much publicity. Lake County should be known instead of the meth capital of the world as the big bass capital of the world. That would be a much more positive image. Sig Taylor would be the poster child for FLW. He would have gone from making a comfortable living fishing to way over six figures. So you see just how a little thing, either positive or negative, can impact the state of California. It's a no-win situation without the ability to cull, and it has no biological effect. The department's position on tournaments has always been, and as far as I know it still is, that they have zero impact on the fishery as a whole because all the fish are released alive. So we would like you to consider this for us, and if at all possible, and as fast as possible. We would hate to see this take the normal course and not be done until next December because we are being impacted right now. Every day that this goes on, we lose in many ways. So we thank you. for your time and your consideration.
I have two things. One is to let you know that your contact of Congressman Mike Thompson did not fall on deaf ears. He made a personal phone call to me over this issue after that. And the second thing is I want to once again thank you guys for coming here today. And I'm going to, while you're still here, deviate from our regular agenda if the commission, the rest of my colleagues don't mind, and ask the department to give their report that would have been later on today on this issue to us while you're here. So, Sankey, if you don't mind.
Thank you.
My pleasure. I'd like to make a few statements, a series of statements, just to kind of clear the air, because there was a lot of misconception about what all happened. First off, the department does very much support bass fishing and tournaments. I mean, it's a big boost to the economy to a lot of these rural communities around the lakes, and we have no problem with that. The second thing I'd like to make is the practice of having a possession limit and then continuing to fish is illegal currently. The third thing was our wardens are not the only ones that enforce our rules, and we were having, while we may show some discretion, we have no way of asking that kind of discretion from a park ranger, for example. And it's our job to make sure to communicate to our anglers what the rules are so they can work within the rules. And we felt compelled to warn our anglers that this practice is, in fact, illegal. And they run the risk of getting cited by someone, a warden or some other law enforcement officer. That was the intent of that culling warning. Culling itself is not illegal. What currently is illegal is to have a possession limit and then continue to fish. So that's kind of the fact. We do appreciate very much the bass organizations meeting with us. We had a great meeting. It was very cooperative. We explained the situation. They understood it. It is not a biological issue because of the nature of the way these tournaments are run. We have very good bass fisheries in this state. It's mostly a social issue. There's some folks that don't like the idea of bigger limits. The department does not have a problem with changing the rule. We believe the simplest way to solve this problem is to change the Section 230 that regulates tournaments. I mean, one option is to change the rule in general, but it has ramifications across all angling, and that could be a little more complicated. The cleanest way to make a change in the existing Title 14 just for permitted bass tournaments, that's the simplest. It's controlled. But it's your pleasure. We have no problems with fixing this. It's just we don't have the power to do it. Only the commission does. Any questions?
I want to hear from the rest of the commissioners, but I'm willing to make that move right now and change it for the tournaments to where the culling rule does not apply in licensed tournaments. And I commend the Lake County tournament for going through a forfeit. I had recommended to some of the guys I talked to about doing that for that tournament so they wouldn't have a problem with it. And I can't believe how big a fish they caught to win that thing. I used to have a place at Clear Lake and fish bass there for years and never caught bass like that back then. So I'd like to see if my colleagues are willing to go along with this and hear from them for now.
Is that a motion?
Well, I want to give everybody a chance to say something, and I'm willing to make a motion.
Yeah, it's interesting.
My brother and my father,
turn on Hatchby, now live in Oklahoma, but they're big bass fishermen, and they even contacted me on this, so I just want to let you know that I'm being lobbied by my own family members. And I think it's an absolutely right thing to do. I don't know how we legally do it. I mean, do we have to notice? Do we have to do – yeah, we have to do all that. But I think, obviously, changing the regulations applying to bass tournaments is the right thing to do, and I'm willing to go along with that. So,
Rich?
Mr. President, the new kid on the block agrees completely. I have to admit to being one of those fools who watches television and thinks that those way-offs are exciting.
Any comments, Mike?
Second motion.
Yeah. That I'll make that in the form of a motion then, and Mike seconded it. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
It's unanimous.
Okay, just
so the director will explain the process, and you guys can go back and tell everybody what we're doing.
Just to clarify, thank you. The motion was to authorize staff to publish notice of a proposed change to Section 230 of Title 14 Once we get the regulatory language prepared, we'll file the notice with the Office of Administrative Law. When they print it in their notice register, which is usually 10 days after the notice is filed with them, that begins the 45-day public review and comment period. At the end of that time period is when the commission will consider adoption of the proposed change. Based on our meeting schedule, I would think that the action would be taken at the commission's June meeting.
For the tournaments, yes. Yes, sir. And then I just want to say that I believe that that what the gentleman said earlier is if we don't do something like this, there's a chance of a lot of these tournaments moving out of the state, and we lose the income to fish and game from these guys, and you think you got budget problems today. So thanks one more time, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Chairman Kelly.
Yeah, real quick.
Just one question. We need to let our organizations know that we're going to continue the four fish limit until this has been finalized. So we're looking at approximately 90 days?
June, probably.
Well, yeah. Once the commission adopts the regulations, then the process is we put together what's called a rulemaking file and submit that to the Office of Administrative Law. We will ask for an expedited review and effective upon filing, but technically they have 30 working days in which to review our rulemaking file.
Okay.
So we're talking sometime towards the middle to late July, August 1st time period to have it effective.
Thank you. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Okay. But we'll be sending you a copy of the what's called the initial statement of reasons with the proposed change, and I'm sure the department and our staff will be in contact with your organizations to help craft the language.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Gentlemen, thank you.
Okay, Steve Schimmick, followed by Aaron Simmons.
Good morning, commissioners and staff. First of all, I want to say that I am talking on MLPA, which is on the agenda a little bit later on. I called, and it's because it's receipt of an informational item, and I asked if there would be public comment. I was told to give public comment now. So will you indulge me, or should I?
Yeah.
All right, thank you. My name is Steve Schimmick. I am executive director of the Otter Project. I'm here this morning to give you my personal take on how the MLPA initiative is going. In my view, it's going great. I personally participate in roundtables, Blue Ribbon Task Force meetings, the science team, and all the other special meetings, including caucus meetings. It is a ton of work. It is going really fast. I appreciate all the effort that staff, the Blue Ribbon Task Force, and everybody is putting to this. Literally hundreds of people are participating, representing every conceivable stakeholder group. Just because I say that the process is going well doesn't necessarily mean that I'm getting what I want. But frankly, because everyone is participating, I kind of see that as the process. And I might not be getting what I want, but maybe some of the other people aren't either, and the process is moving forward, and we're just not there yet. I do want to point out one possible bump in the road. Yesterday I was invited to give testimony before the Assembly Budget Subcommittee 3 meeting in Sacramento. There I vigorously supported increased funding for the department, especially the Marine program, especially the MLPA. I did my best. When the department was questioned, the chair commented that if MLPA falls behind schedule, perhaps funding could be deferred. And so there's a danger there, as I see it. So, frankly, I just urge you guys, I urge the BRTF, and the department and the commission to stay on schedule, and let's keep all doing the best job we can. Thank you so much.
Aaron Simmons, followed by Jamie Ray.
Good morning. I'm Aaron Simmons with the Ocean Conservancy, and I'd like to echo what Mr. Shimmick just said. On behalf of the Ocean Conservancy and our 25,000 California members, I would like to thank you for your continued participation in the MLPA initiative, including the planned receipt of the draft master plan in May. We urge you to act expeditiously in your consideration and approval of the master plan framework, as we have acted expeditiously in our continued review of each draft that has come forward. We are encouraged by the dedication and momentum of the state to continue moving the MLPA forward. There's a lot of support for the process. It is going well, and we look forward to seeing it through. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jamie Ray, followed by Paul Weakland.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jamie Ray, and I've been before you before. It's been a very long process of the mammal trapping, the nuisance mammal trapping regulations in California. Because this is such a very different type of trapping than consumptive trapping, where you're trapping for fur, I'd like to ask if there's any movement forward on the trapping regulations for nuisance wildlife. Make a couple of recommendations for things to be included in it. I'm sure you're all aware of the history that an initial package was put forward by the department that included what I consider to be good minimum humane standards for the capture, transport, and killing of wildlife that are trapped as nuisance animals. The trappers were not happy to be regulated, and a second package was put forward. The first package pulled back, second package put forward, and that package was sort of totally the other extreme. It was it had an exemption for the three most commonly trapped wildlife species, the raccoons, the opossum, and skunk, so that there would be no regulations that would apply to those species. The things that concern me are not only that the regulations are put forward, because until the regulations are put forward, the people who are getting a trapping license as required by law starting in January of 2003, those people are taking a test on trapping that is exclusively for consumptive use. In other words, it's a fur trapping test. So they're being tested on how to flesh pelts, and in fact, people who are trapping for nuisance wildlife are not permitted to sell the fur. So that's a little bit of a problem. But that whole test, as I understand it, can't really be changed with a new study guide until regulations are put forward, so that the test will include what the regulations are for this particular industry. Being a financial industry, obviously very, very different than, you know, shooting for, killing these animals for consumptive use, either eating or for the furs. Because it is a industry that is, the public is paying for this. Individuals are looking in their yellow pages and calling up somebody and saying, you know, I have a mother and baby raccoons in my attic, I have a skunk under my deck, something like that. There's public concerns here, and one of the concerns that I have, and I would like to ask if the department, maybe the commission can ask the department if they will address, is what the trappers have to reveal in terms of the law to the people who are hiring their services. In other words, do they have the main thing that concerns me is whether or not they have to tell the person what will happen to the animal that's trapped. It's a what do you call it? Telling the truth thing, you know, consumer affairs type thing, yes. But what commonly happens is that the trappers are going to tell somebody that the animal is relocated and the animal is, in fact, being killed. And since somebody is paying for, you know, $100 per animal to be removed, they should, you know, have some say as to whether or not, you know, consumer, I guess it would be a fraud issue. If you say, oh, I'm going to relocate the animal, and then you don't and you kill it, some people are okay with paying to kill an animal, and some people are not, in fact, okay with killing an animal. And there are always other alternatives, including exclusion and deterrence and blah, blah, for those people. But to actually – so a client notification form that would let people know, you know, what's going to happen to the animals. And as far as the regulations themselves, there's three basic, you know, areas that I'm hoping that they will address, and that is the capture. I know the commission has asked the snare issue to be addressed in terms of how can we make them less lethal, can we use stops and locks. But the trapping itself, the transportation is an issue that's of great concern to me. These animals are in the back of a pickup truck, closed pickup truck, you know, dozen skunks, raccoons, opossums stacked up in live traps waiting to go somewhere to be killed. It's hot inside of a closed back of a pickup truck, and I think that maybe if that could be limited to a couple of hours or, you know, or that they have to have adequate airflow. But the actual transportation time of these animals who are, you know, nuisance animals and being removed by paid trappers. And then the last thing is that they're killed in some kind of a humane manner. Currently, you know, as you know, the regulations state that animals causing damage to property can be trapped and killed at any time and in any manner. And in a state like California, I hope that the regulations will address some minimum humane standards for the way in which they are trapped, transported, and killed. And I'm wondering if there's any movement towards this or a new package. Do we know?
Yeah, I mean, we were all, you know, doing this thing for a year and a half, right, where the package came forward, and we went back to you guys, and then it came forward again, and then it blew up, and now it's in the department's hands. So you're right in asking, where are we?
It's a third package that will be put forward.
Let's find out.
Thank you.
Commissioners, we did report back to you on this trapping issue, and when we did, we reported that we find ourselves in compliance with the statute under our existing regulations. We do have humane standards on the books. One of the tricks is there's more than one entity permitting people for animal damage control. We're not the only outfit. There's two others. Structural pest control, in the pesticide toxic waste folks, and they're all required to get permits. And we decided that we're going to honor their permits. They have to adhere to standards too, established through their agencies and boards. We have upgraded the exam and the study material, and they're in place, approved by the director. So we accomplished that mission, and we reported to you at the February meeting. We were right there. So we've fulfilled our obligations. Regarding the regulatory package, we informed you that we had extensive comments on the EIR. We neither have the staff nor the resources to cope with the extensive comments, and we have indefinitely withdrawn any proposed changes to the trapping regulations. We have no plans to pursue it.
Okay, so folks that are concerned might want to look at the current regulatory package and the new guidelines that they put out.
Yes,
see where you are on that, and if you have specific suggestions, maybe come back and help us out because they don't have the staff to do it themselves.
Yeah, we have extensively rewritten the exam study materials.
I haven't looked at
that. And exam. It is quite an exam now. I mean, because the old one, as you know, had a lot of...
Go ahead and kill a trap and do anything.
Yeah, so we have significantly upgraded. So when a person is able to pass our current exam, they're probably the most educated and informed trappers you can have out there. The trick is the legislation didn't comprehensively deal with all the other entities that permit individuals like this, and we're not in a position to go after that. So that's kind of the status.
Take a look at it, and then just...
Sonky, am I understanding right that you have put forward some changes to animals causing damage to property can be trapped and killed at any time and in any manner? Is that a regulation now, or is this just that there's a test that asks them if they know what a humane way to kill is, let's say?
Well, that I think you're referring to a statute. That's actually legislative. That's something this commission can't even change. So that's just law.
I'm thinking of 4152 and 4180.
Those are statutes.
Non-game.
You have to go to the legislature to change those.
Natural Resources.
We have no authority to change those.
And 465.5, you can You're not going to add anything in there for any type of minimum humane standards for transporting animals or...
We have standards that we can... I can have you contact staff to share with you our current standards. To change them, that was the part that we could not complete because of extensive comments on our environmental document. We just can't deal with it.
Could you give me that information?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll give you a card and you can contact. I'll give you a contact.
Uh-huh. Good. Well, I guess that's what I came to ask is if, there could be some changes in regulations. I really do believe that we do need some changes in regulations because, is this something the commission can work on at all, putting in some kind of...
Some of us do that. Changes need to be made, but the references you're making are legislative changes that only the state legislature can make.
Mm-hmm. Through code.
Your groups about that kind of
through stuff. Code, yeah. Right. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Paul Weakland, followed by Virginia Hanley.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. I recently received a letter from Patricia Wolf, a Marine Regional Manager. In this letter, she says she wants to appease and amend all the problems. And it says here, the commission at its upcoming meeting, adoption is scheduled for March 17th. Meeting, you will be able to see all of the responses to the comments on the document of the Abalone Recovery and Management Plan. Well, that's untruthful and not happening. I also would like to make some comments about her letter. In her letter, it says, excerpts and comments from Appendix G from the ARMP, the Abalone Recovery and Management Plan. C11 says here that her response, only black abalones were affected by withering syndrome. This is not true, and I am very upset about this. Withering syndrome was the reason that the Fish and Game Commission closed the fishing for black, pink, green, and white abalones in 1996. The black abalones were closed in 1993. To date, we still haven't been able to look at these comments. Here is a withering syndrome in red abalones. This is by James Moore and Carolyn Friedman, Department of Fish and Game pathologist. So this is in direct contradiction to what Patty Wolf is saying. Here it says, population declines and the occurrence of shrunken animals have been noted in several California abalone species. Davis, 1992, reported from 1983-1989, populations of red and pink abalones at four of the Channel Islands declined 97% to 98%, respectively. The red abalone in 1997 and 1998 in Southern California to Ensenada, Mexico, experienced unusually high proportions of animals with withering syndrome. Here's another scientific article. Carolyn Freeman, pathologist from the Fish and Game, also related to an executive of the Scripps Institution of Oceanography. And she says, a new disease, withering syndrome. How does she know that? Because she knows it was concocted and brewed up in the institution of Scripps Institution in San Diego. It also says that heavy losses in the Halitosis swanson, the rufusus, white abalones in Baja California and Southern California, in Northern Mexico and Southern California were affected. White abalones. Here's another scientific paper. Millions of dollars of grant money went into these things. It also says here the transmission of withering syndrome in California. It says here, Pete Hacker, 1992, Richards and Davis. Stocks of substantial red and pink abalones also declined during the 1980s, and the role of withering syndrome in the decline. This paper also states, widespread distribution of infected seed stock prior to being recognized as potentially significant pathogen, Freeman, observations in 1997 and 1998. Red abalones in southern and central portions of the state began observing sharp elevated decline due to withering syndrome. Yeah. Here, disease of aquatic organisms.
Paul,
in here,
wrap
it talks,
it up because your time, you got your red light.
It talks about abalones in decline, all species of abalones with withering syndrome. The Journal of Invertebrate Pathology states that hybridization might very well be the root cause of the withering syndrome, Scripps Institution Oceanography. Over and over, you continue to take the abalone off the agenda, even though we are promised year after year after year. Could you please tell me now, what is the status of the abalone recovery management plan, and why, again, have you taken it off the agenda, and what's going on with it?
We have not received the draft from the department. You'll have to take it up with Patty Wolf.
According to my letter with Patty Wolf, that has all been done.
That has not been done.
So she lied again. You know, you look at the commission, and everybody wants to believe, but when you look at the abalone situation, it just taints and tarnishes everything that you're trying to accomplish because of the hypocrisy and the contradictions. And, you know, all we want is fair and equitable treatment. Legitimate, honest responses, and we're not getting it.
Thank you, Paul. The commission is also unhappy that it has not received the draft plan.
And I hope I pointed out that some of the comments are definitely in error. Why do they rewrite history? It's not appropriate.
Okay, thank you. Virginia?
Hello, my name is Virginia Handley. You have seen me over the years as representing the Fund for Animals. The Fund for Animals has recently merged with the Humane Society of the United States, so I have merged with them. We are now a hybrid.
Was it a hostile takeover?
Some may think so, but a few other opinions, but no, it was a very, very friendly merging. So we look forward to working together. And there's been changes on this commission. I wanted to welcome Mr. Rogers, and I hope you know what you were getting into. I think with your background, maybe you got a little bit of a hint of what's ahead. And we look forward to seeing a new commissioner, too, that will take Marilyn Hendrickson's place, and I understand there's some interviews to possibly fulfilling that space, and we do hope that we'll have a good, strong environmental voice. I wanted to tell you some of the things that that we've been dealing with that's under your purview. I'm on the Advisory Committee on Exotic Animals for the Fish and Game Department, and recently the need for a whole redoing of the exotic animal permits, the inspections. They have not been properly inspected for many years. In fact, the regulations were in violation of the law that said they had to be inspected either by fish and game personnel or under a memorandum of understanding. Instead, commission passed a regulation allowing veterinarians who were hired by the permittees to sign off on the regulations. Well, that was in violation of the law. There was a lawsuit, a settlement, and so we put together this advisory committee, which we had had earlier. And I think some of our environmental regulations concerning exotics in captivity, their minimum standards, and their care are very good. And they just need to be enforced so that we don't have instances like we had recently with the tiger who was recently killed, who had been in someone's house, the chimpanzee, the several of those, that tragic attack that happened there, which was, who was their friend that was bringing them a cake that they attacked. If we could only talk to the animals and tell them, this is your pal, back off. I, too, am concerned about the trap regulations. The fund was the sponsor of SB 1685 that required this these people to be licensed. And I do think, though, you need to designate the species that are covered. The law right now says the non-game species as designated by the commission. Well, non-game species is every little mouse, rat, mole, gopher. They were never intended to be covered. At one time, we even put them in the bill, listed the species in the bill, But then the Farm Bureau were also involved with it, and they said, well, we don't need to do that. And I really didn't feel we need to do it because I felt very confident that the commission would do it because we already have all these species that we cover in the environmental document. It's very clear what species are of interest to the Fish and Game Department, and I didn't feel it needed to be in the legislation. Now I think maybe it should have been in the legislation because then there was this uproar that brought us all of the pest control trappers who say we're talking about rats and a lot of confusion that resulted from that. I think the commission should designate those species, and certainly they should be including those three most commonly trapped species, the possum, the skunk, and the raccoon. We'd also like you to add on bats. Bats are very sensitive creatures, and a lot of them are being trapped as nuisances, and they need some minimum standards as well as that these other animals need. And we do need these pest control boards. If the Fish and Game doesn't want to take them on, then the Agriculture Board, the Structural Pest Control, then they need to be passing their own regulations that reflect Fish and Game's regulations so that we're all working on the same level. Hopefully Fish and Game even a higher level. Finally, something I always bring up, but especially now because we do have a new commissioner and the fact that you're in Oakland, I think you should all take a little tour of the live animal markets when you're out of here. We continue to have horrible problems, illegal species. None of the laws are being enforced. As you know, the state of CalTIP, and the wardens, there's no way that this whole industry can be regulated once the animals are here. We feel that you should simply ban the importation of these turtles and frogs that are all non-native animals that have horrific effects on the environment and on our own native species. Someone recently went to a market and watched somebody carry out 12 live turtles. Well, were they taking them home to cook? Which, I mean, they're not supposed to do that. There's supposed to be signs up telling them. All that's ignored. There's no compliance at all. Recently, we had the New Year celebration. I can imagine the number of animals that were released into the wild in that celebration. And while I'm certainly in sympathy in setting animals free who have been in a horrendous situation like that, the effect that it has on our own species, really, the solution is don't have them there in the first place. Thank you.
Thank you, Regina.
That concludes the cards that I have on public forum. We'll move to the next item, item two. It's adoption and ratification of the commission's findings regarding the rejection of the petition to list the tricolored blackbird as an endangered species. As the commission may recall, at your February 3rd, 2005 meeting in San Diego, it made a finding to reject the petition to list the tricolored blackbird. This item is scheduled to ratify the commission's findings. Copies of the draft findings have been distributed to the commissioners, and I'll turn it over now to the commission's legal counsel.
Mr. Kellogg, members of the commission, as you recall, at the conclusion of the discussion on tricolored blackbird at our last meeting, we as staff asked questions to assure ourselves that we understood what you were taking into consideration in your deliberations and determination on tricolored blackbird. We've done our best to incorporate those. Mr. Traynor has worked long and hard to assemble what we believe were the reasons stated by you, enunciated by you, or relied upon by you as members of the commission in making your determination, and we've tried to incorporate all of those into the findings that we now present to you. Since these are part of the final deliberations of the commission's considerations on tricolored blackbird, again, the public comment section has already been closed, and these reflect only just a final ratification of the reasonings you've already given to us in draft form. These will then become part of the record and complete the process at this point in time for consideration of the tricolored blackbird.
I'll make a motion. We adopt the findings.
Motion. I have a second.
Second. Remember, I disagree with that.
Yes.
Findings.
So I'll second it. Okay. Got a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No.
No.
The ayes have it. Now, be in order.
I disagree with the findings. So why would I agree with them?
Second the motion.
No, it's not.
No, no, I did.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I agree that that's what the commission did. That's so maybe I should.
We're voting.
Okay, okay, we'll make it unanimous. I agree that's what the commission did, even though I didn't agree with what the commission did. So let's say yes. Yeah,
but it's done.
I concur.
It's done. We have to.
I got it. I wasn't being sorry. This is the legal moment, not the substantive moment. Sorry about that, guys.
What we did was a legal moment, too.
I know. I hear you. Sorry about that.
Next item is item three, and it's. It's the same thing. It's the ratification and adoption of findings for the rejection of the petition to delist coho salmon south of San Francisco. And again, draft findings. Draft findings were prepared and distributed to the commissioners for review and consideration.
I'll make a motion.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Ayes have it. Now be in order. That was a lot easier, that one.
I'm sorry. The other one was easy, too. I just wasn't paying attention. Imagine that.
Our next item is a presentation regarding UC Berkeley's wild turkey study and collection in state parks. As the commission may recall, Dr. Reg Barrett from UC Berkeley was before the commission approximately a little less than a year ago to explain his studies in the state parks and promised to come back at a future date with some information on the data that's been collected during his study. And Dr. Reg Barrett is here to make his presentation to the commission. And thank you, Dr. Barrett, for being here.
Well, thank you for inviting me back. This is a progress report on our study in Sonoma County Parks. My name is Reg Barrett. I'm a professor of wildlife management at UC Berkeley. I was contacted by the Department of Parks and Recreation to carry out a study of turkeys in state parks in Sonoma County and help them come up with a draft management plan for turkeys. And I have been working both with Fish and Game staff and with state park staff to try and see if we can't come up with something that will solve everybody's problems. In addition to that, we've been collecting turkeys. You allowed me to take 12 turkeys a month, and I have provided you with a graph here. We started in October 2003. You can see how we've done. We're in March of 2005. We've collected 4 this month so far, and I expect to take 12 altogether. And we'll continue through September 2005. We have not analyzed any of the samples yet. We do complete necropsies on each animal. So I don't have any. Are there any turkeys left? Yes, I'd say there are probably pretty near as many turkeys there now as there were when we started. There's plenty of big ones. Was out there last week, and if you gobble, you can hear gobbling coming from every side of the park. There's many turkeys still there. the reason you might wonder why, the pattern you see on this graph suggests that there's periods December, January, February where we don't take many. That's because the park rangers will not allow us to have wheeled vehicles in the parks when the roads are wet. So it's difficult to get in there at that time. When the roads are dry, then we have not had much trouble getting our 12 turkeys. But I'd be happy to answer any questions you have. I look forward to coming back at the end of the study and giving you the results of all the necropsies, but we haven't analyzed the samples. They're still in the freezer. I have 2 students ready to help me do some of the lab work this summer. We have a collaborator, Dr. Robert Lane has gotten an NIH grant to look at the diseases, especially the zoonoses that turkeys may be carrying. So things are going along as I have planned, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have or take any comments you have at this point.
Any questions or comments, Commissioner? Thank you.
When do you think you'd have the results of your studies completed?
Well, we need to have the report to the Parks and Recreation people at the end of September 2005. So I'd be happy to provide anybody who wants a copy as well.
What is it that the Parks is looking for in this study?
Well, they're trying to find out what as much about turkey biology as possible. And I'll use that information in trying to come up with a management plan for them.
Just in these particular turkeys, or isn't there enough published information out there? I mean, gosh, there's been thousands of studies on turkeys.
There's 4,000 published papers on turkeys in North America. Yeah. 19 of them have been done in California. California is quite a different environment from the rest of the country. Most of the papers, by far the majority of those 19 papers on California turkeys are about how to release them, not about their basic ecology. There's only about 3 that cover their basic ecology, food habits, reproductive rates, this sort of thing. And sure, you can extrapolate from other parts of the country, but it would be nice to confirm what's going on in the area that we're specifically interested in, Sonoma County.
So, and you're telling me you've made no dent in the population. By the time you're done, it's
not a perceptible dent at this point.
So are you doing counts as well as, you know, as well as harvesting? Are you keeping an eye on the population?
Sure, yeah. I mean, turkeys are very productive.
I'm anxious to see what you find. I'm sure the birds will be glad when you're done as well.
According to what you're saying, you should be completed in time where we would like to have you come back to our December meeting and give us the lowdown on your result.
Okay, I will try and do that.
The whole range, like food studies, disease analysis, the whole biology.
Everything we can get from necropsied animals.
Our December meeting's in Concord, BC.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
Our next item is item number 5.
I'm sorry, I didn't sign up for this. I should have, but yes, we Virginia Animal Humane Society of the United States. We don't see anything coming out of this study of any consequence at all. We think it's an excuse to get rid of that many amount of turkeys that they could get rid of because they consider the turkeys a nuisance. I don't know what wildlife management is going to come out of here outside of starting hunting in the state parks. So we were not happy about the study. I dealt with the bill last year with the Senator Chesbro, and the depredation permits for the turkeys. All of this is just a catastrophe all the way around of all of these turkeys being imported for hunting purposes and then moving out as they do so well and reproducing, and now they're scratching on people's cars and they're in the state parks and they're a nuisance, and now they want to think of some scientific way to basically get rid of them. We're sorry that the whole thing ever happened, and we don't want these turkeys killed in our state parks.
Virginia, I just have to ask you, because you attended a demonstration that the Wild Turkey Federation put on for us on trapping and relocating turkeys.
Yeah.
Is it your belief that that would be a better way to handle?
Certainly than just shooting them outright. Yes. I noticed that the only places that they'll be released, though, are other places that they can be shot.
I was just trying to get you to agree with us once. That's all I was trying to do.
I've agreed with you more than once. More than once.
Well, we all agree that the wild turkey
right. Yeah. No, certainly a preference is that they be moved than killed, but I'd like to see them moved to places that just isn't restricted to those where somebody else can shoot them someplace else.
You need to buy
Thank
a
you.
Ranch.
I need a big ranch.
Big ranch.
Yes.
And
rent to pay for it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Item 5 is a receipt of the department's report and recommendations on its review of the commission's wetlands policy. And Commissioners, in your handout material today has a copy of the department's memo on this, and Deputy Director Mastrip will present the department's report.
Good morning still, Commissioners. This is part of our ongoing installment program for review of Commission policy. This one specifically deals with the wetland definition, mitigation strategies, and habitat value assessment methodology on wetlands. You have a very extensive overview here, and you will probably want to read at your leisure. The bottom line is the department is it describes how the department's implementing those policies and currently has no recommendations to change any of the existing policy. We find it a sound and effective policy for wetlands. Any questions?
Any questions? Come in.
Thank you. The department's legislative report will be continued until tomorrow. Julie Altman will be at the commission's meeting tomorrow and make the department's legislative report at that time. Item 7 is receipt of department informational items, receipt of an update on the department's budget. Anything come out of the budget hearing?
Yes, Commissioners, we had we attended the first subcommittee meeting of our budget folks in the legislature yesterday. The good news, everybody recognizes that the department is underfunded to do its jobs, many jobs, and there's intense interest in helping us solve that problem, and the committee appears to be ready to spend a fair amount of time helping us identify funding solutions. So the word's out that we're broke, that we don't have enough money, and there seems to be a lot of interest in supporting the department's mission. So that's good news.
Go ahead, Paul.
If I could just add on to this a little bit. We've been tasking very vigorously over the past few months on working on our stream bed alteration program, our 1,600 permits, those are called. We had sent out for review back in April of 2004, a package basically for increasing those fees and basically staying within statute that requires the department to recover costs for implementing that program. We pulled that back and have retooled it and now put it back into the Governor's Action Office request. That has been signed by the Director and the Department, or the Resources Secretary, and reviewed by the Department of Finance, so I believe it's over in the governor's office for action. So if the governor supports that, it will go back out for a 30-day review. And hopefully our fee program will then bring the department much-needed revenue in that program to the tune of about an additional $1.2 million that will make that part of our budget whole. So that's good news from our standpoint, and we'll look forward to public comments on the resubmittal of those fees for the 1600 program.
Thank you, guys. That's some positive stuff.
Can I just ask one quick thing about the legislature?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if this has ever been tried before, but being an old lobbyist, I'm just thinking, because this panel is very political, and that means on all sides of the spectrum, I just mean we're political appointees. If you ever need us, I think we'd be willing to go see members of the legislature on behalf of the department to talk about budget, because we're in agreement there. What I'm saying is I have good friends in the legislature, you have good friends in the legislature, you have good friends in the legislature, and we might be good tools to use. Maybe I shouldn't go to certain members, but I should certainly go to Ms. Pavley and Senator Kuhl. Others could go to others. I'm just saying I'd be willing to help the department with their budgetary needs if you need me. I'll be willing to denounce you if that will help, too. So whatever you want, just let us know we're available, I think. That's all I'm saying. So just, that's all.
Commissioners, we always appreciate support, and,
you're scared to do this. Okay, thank you. Never mind. I'll do it on my own.
Now, there's been a few times in the past where the director has asked one of the commissioners to
I'm just saying use us if you need us.
Go comment to a budget subcommittee member.
The president's very good at this stuff, and I mean, we're all in agreement that the department needs help and needs more money, so that's all I'm saying. Okay.
Mr. Weakland, I'll call you at the end of the department's informational items, and you can provide your comments on all three at that time. You're welcome. Mr. Ugaretz is going to provide an update on the MLPA and then also on the Channel Islands monitoring.
Good morning, Mr. President, Commissioners. John Ugaretz with the Department's Marine Region. Starting with the Marine Life Protection Act initiative update, the Blue Ribbon Task Force met on February 22nd and 23rd in Monterey for their third meeting. The primary purpose of the meeting was to discuss the Central Coast Study Region, which, as you recall from when Secretary Chrisman and Director Broderick came before you in Morro Bay several months ago, they indicated that a region within the Central Coast would be selected as the starting point for implementation of Marine Life Protection Act. The task force also discussed the first draft of the master plan framework at that meeting. The intent was to decide on a Central Coast Study Region, the boundaries of that region at that meeting. Unfortunately, due to a lack of a quorum, that decision could not be made and was deferred to their next meeting. The master plan framework, however, received many comments both from the public and the task force members themselves, and a revised draft master plan was made available to the public on Tuesday of this week. This revision shows changes based on public comment, science team input, and task force recommendations. I feel it's significantly improved and still has room for discussion of several points. Public comments on this revised draft will be accepted until March 25th, at which point a third revision will be prepared and released in the first week of April. The science advisory team is meeting next week across the street here in Oakland at the Elihu Harris Building, and they will discuss the current revision of the draft master plan framework and provide recommendations on specific portions of that document, including required elements of networks, the definition of habitats, and other scientific issues in the plan. The task force will meet again on April 11th and 12th in Los Angeles. I believe the proposed location is at the Pasadena Conference Center, though that has not been confirmed yet. At the April meeting, they will decide on a Central Coast Study Region, and they have ensured us that they will be able to address quorum issues in case everybody can't make it, so they can make that decision there. And they will also approve a final draft version of the master plan framework to forward to the Department of Fish and Game at that time. The department will review the revisions made by the task force based on public comment and scientific input, and will provide a draft for your review sometime late in April in preparation for your joint special hearing with the Blue Ribbon Task Force on May 23rd in Sacramento. So we do expect to give you a significant amount of time to review that document prior to your meeting in May at the joint meeting. As Mr. Shimmick noted this morning, there has been significant interest in the MLPA budget from the legislature. The department has participated in several question and answer rounds, both in written and verbal format with legislators. And primarily, they're interested in seeing a product from this process. They're interested in seeing deadlines agreed to in the memorandum of understanding being met. And they're also very interested in long-term costs for this process, not just for the process to discuss the master plan and to discuss the Central Coast region, but what the implementation costs will be. The department is working up potential costs both for enforcement and management and monitoring. Of course, as we've noted before, the costs depend on the outcome. So we can't give a concrete number at this point in dollars as to what it will cost, but we can give ideas for what will funding for enforcement cost given scenario A, B, and C, and what are the general costs for enforcement in marine protected areas throughout the state, as well as monitoring, management, and other costs. It's worth noting that one of the Blue Ribbon Task Force products beyond a master plan framework and beyond a Central Coast Study Region is to provide recommendations for long-term funding sources, and they will be providing those recommendations to you, the department, and the legislature. With that, I'm happy to take any questions on Marine Life Protection Act before we go on to Channel Islands.
Any questions from the commissioner?
I didn't know we were having a joint hearing. I didn't know we were having a joint hearing.
I believe that's scheduled for May 23rd.
Joint hearing with the Blue Ribbon Task Force?
May 23rd.
Is that because we asked for them to come and report to us? Or was that something else?
They were going to try to have it to us at your May meeting, but because of their scheduling and so on, they made the request, I think it was at the December meeting, to have a special meeting in the end of May, and we selected May 23rd as the joint meeting.
That's different from our normal fishing meeting, though, isn't it?
It's right.
An additional meeting, right.
Be an additional meeting with the joint Blue Ribbon.
Is this supposed to take place of what we requested, that somebody from them, from that organization, or group, rather, come and report to us?
We had asked that Eisenberg come and report.
Yeah.
Well, we can have Eisenberg come at your May meeting, but
this
will be the...
What is this 23rd meeting?
Be officially receiving the draft master plan.
It's a joint meeting.
It's a joint meeting with
the commission.
Right.
Did you send us something?
Yeah, we made a decision at a commission meeting.
Okay. All right.
On the date.
I think the conversation was about we didn't want just this given to us fait accompli and just say act on this. So we asked for two things: for someone to come before us.
Right.
And then to be together with them when they got the draft meeting so we could hear the public comment and all that. We don't have to do anything there. We don't have to vote anything.
Exactly. The proposed adoption date for this master plan framework, and I do want to emphasize that it is a framework plan for the whole state. This is not lines on the map. This and the proposed adoption date is in August of 2005, and we're working with Executive Director Traynor right now to figure out when best to schedule that adoption. You are adopting the master plan framework.
You are recommending that we adopt it.
Exactly.
Right.
And that's after conversation.
And that's exactly why we wanted this update, is because this train has left the station, and from all indications I'm hearing, we're just supposed to rubber stamp this thing. And that's not going to happen.
I certainly don't think that's what was presented to you by the Secretary for Resources and the Director to rubber stamp it.
Yeah, I don't think rubber stamping is what we're doing either. That's why I'd like to do the joint meeting to figure out, hear from people what they're proposing, so we don't just – I don't want to have the first time we ever hear it, August,
yes,
when we're supposed to adopt.
Yeah,
so that means
exactly.
A presentation and a joint meeting would be good, I think.
Yeah, the joint meeting
– and a presentation.
Be a presentation by – the Blue Ribbon Task Force staff on what's in the draft master plan. That would be part of this joint hearing, and then we would receive public comments.
Yeah.
The commission then can then identify which meetings you want to receive public comments on the draft plan, and the proposed time frame is for you to consider adoption at your August meeting.
Yeah.
Whether or not you want to keep that schedule, that's entirely up to you. But that's the schedule that they'll be proposing. And if you want to take comments at your public comments at your June meeting, and if you want a special hearing, one or more special hearings to receive public comments before August, we can schedule those. But, yeah, my understanding, after we selected the date of May 23rd, we have the standing update, which Mr. Ugaretz has been giving on the process, and then we'll have the joint meeting May 23rd with the entire Blue Ribbon Task Force.
When is our Fish and Game Commission meeting scheduled in May?
May 5th.
Okay, so can we have a presentation by the executive director or somebody, just so we know what the heck is being proposed for the May meeting on May 5th.
Absolutely.
And then when we go into the May meeting,
we will.
Mine wasn't so much that they just come and do a presentation. I wanted every month an update as to the progress
and
what's going on, what are some of the issues.
I hear what you're saying.
The way this is headed is, we're just supposed to.
But that's why I'm asking if we can have someone give us an update.
Objections.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. So we can have an update in May 5th and then a joint commission hearing on May 23rd, leading up to continued updates for our final decision in August. Is that
I totally didn't have that 23rd down for some reason. It's my own fault, but I got other stuff supposed to be at, but this is too important. Not here.
Where's it at?
Sacramento.
LEPA building.
Yeah. You asked for it, I think.
I'm leaving the day after, so but I'm going to try to make it.
Some of us will be there.
So yeah, I mean,
not that we have
to
have it.
Starts at 9. I know. I mean, you can't get here. Maybe we should have found a
set on it. And then, because we're going to take it again.
Well, it's easy for you because you're in Sacramento.
I didn't even say something else.
And Richard said it's going to be difficult for him. So, and it's, well, we're just talking about maybe just having a subcommittee go to it, Rich, is why I'm saying
that.
It's really going to be difficult for me. But, Bob, will you make it?
Yeah, I'll be there.
I'll make you on a subcommittee.
Yep. Okay. Mr. Flores and I can cover the spectrum.
Okay. Well, that, Bob and Mike attend that meeting as a subcommittee.
Mr.
Keller?
Did you say there's a commission meeting on May 5th and
6th? Yes.
Actually, it's May 3rd, 4th, and 5th. It's our joint meeting with the Board of Forestry. 3rd and 4th is with the Board of Forestry, and the 5th is the commission meeting.
And the 6th is nothing?
The 6th is nothing.
So it's just one day commission meeting?
Sacramento.
Thank you. Okay.
Back in your analysis, Dan. Secretary of State.
My calendar's up front.
Yep. No one's there right now. It's an easy room to get. Oh, let me get confirmed.
Okay, next item.
Just so there's no misunderstanding, the draft master plan really is similar to, I guess you could say, to the master plan the commission adopted in dealing with the Marine Life Management Act, in how we're going to proceed in looking at establishing marine protected areas.
Or not establishing.
Or not, yeah, but it'd be the process that the commission will be looking at in the future.
Maybe I should go over some of the timeline of the Marine Life Protection Act, because as you're probably aware, the legislated deadline to provide you with a master plan was January 1st of this year. Through the MOU, we have agreed to a timeline that extends that. However, the legislative deadlines have not been changed. The legislature is aware of this and is, as we noted with the budget, looking very closely over our shoulders on progress in this act. The intent is to provide a framework that guides the implementation of the act, which means discussing MPAs throughout California, improving the existing array of MPAs, and finish that framework this year. Then the discussions for a study region in the Central Coast for the first implementation of that framework begin immediately, and we provide you with some recommendations and proposed regulations for MPAs or changes to existing MPAs or whatever for the Central Coast region by March of 2006 for proposed adoption by November of 2006. The rest of the state, the intent is to proceed in phases in different regions throughout the state between November of 2006 and 2011 to finish the full implementation of Marine Life Protection Act by 2011. So that's the intent of this process and the MOU that was signed by the Resources Agency, the Department of Fish and Game, and our outside partners. So moving on. And I'm sorry, you know, I would like to mention, and there are people here in the audience who have been participating, this process is significantly different than what we've undertaken before for Marine Life Protection Act. We have a 100-person statewide interest group, which represents stakeholders from all kinds of groups around the state. They meet after each Blue Ribbon Task Force meeting to provide us input on the process and the documents. We have been having lots of open public meetings. We've got a tremendous amount of public involvement in these draft documents. The website has been improved significantly. We've got a huge interested parties email list that receive all the documents automatically and provide comments. We have an automatic web comment list that goes to all of the Blue Ribbon Task Force members and staff. And we're really getting a lot more involvement in this effort than we have in the past. And I think you will see when you look at the documents that they're vastly improved and reflect the diversity of views on the issues. So going on to Channel Islands, this update is our agreed-upon schedule that in March of each year we will provide you a preseason update on monitoring efforts, in August a mid-season review of monitoring efforts, and in December a review of results for that year. We provided you the last update this past December, which was results from the first year of monitoring, and monitoring efforts this year are starting to get underway for the upcoming field season. As you may remember, last year, shallow subtidal monitoring efforts were bolstered by funding provided through Federal Coastal Impact Assistance Program, or CIAP monies. Though overall funding this year is less, we expect that monitoring efforts will continue at a similar level, with the exclusion of potentially a few sites that were monitored last year that may not get monitored this year. Helping this effort significantly is the fact that the National Park Service has received a grant from the Parks Natural Resources Preservation Program for more than $500,000 over 3 years. This will increase the park's monitoring sites around the islands from 16 to 32, with new sites focusing on inside and outside the marine protected areas that you established. The PSCO program, the Partnership for Interdisciplinary Studies of Coastal Oceans, will cut back on its scuba surveys this year at the islands due to funding shortfalls. They are, however, cooperating with the department and the Park Service to conduct fish and invertebrate surveys at their core sites and some fish monitoring at the Park Service sites to help help the Park Service efforts. PSCO is also continuing its fish recruitment surveys, due in part to the Department research vessel Garibaldi's support to this program. And PSCO has both ocean current and temperature monitors in place at each island on both their north and south sides. So they have a complete array around the Channel Islands for oceanographic conditions monitoring. The UCSB Love Lab is hoping to help coordinate ROV and submersible surveys with the department and others. And the Channel Islands National Marine Sanctuary intends to have a deep water monitoring workshop, which will help bring the monitoring into the deeper waters in April, late April this year. With regards to ROV surveys, the department's research vessel Garibaldi is being outfitted with a hydraulic A-frame, a winch, and a bow thruster to make it usable for ROV operations. This is being made possible through grant monies and support from Dirk Rosen of Marine Applied Research and Exploration, who presented to you at your last meeting, and contributions from the Commonweal Foundation. The Santa Barbara commercial lobster fisherman, in particular Chris Miller, is working with Dr. Hunter Lanahan at UCSB's Bren School, department staff, and others to establish a lobster monitoring program. This fully collaborative effort should provide new data on both the lobster fishery and MPA operations and how MPAs are performing at the islands. Chris has really done tremendous work here in getting lots of scientists on board and working directly with fishermen, and he should be applauded for his efforts there. They hope to conduct preliminary surveys, I believe, this month, just as soon as actually, lobster season, what's the date today? Lobster season's closing yesterday. They will use commercial gear to help monitor lobster at the islands with cooperative efforts. probably most importantly on the socioeconomic front, one of the most unanimously agreed upon recommendations from constituents was the need for a socioeconomic coordinator. And I'm happy to announce that the sanctuary has contracted with Mr. Chris LaFranchi as a socioeconomic coordinator for efforts at the Channel Islands. He will oversee socioeconomic monitoring efforts, analyze existing data, and collect some new data on socioeconomic impacts of MPAs at the Channel Islands. Additionally, Chris is working in a cooperative effort on a new project to collect information on non-consumptive uses at the Channel Islands, which was one of the biggest gaps in socioeconomic data, and working at both the Channel Islands and the Monterey National Marine Sanctuaries, as well as knowledge, attitudes, and perception surveys, which is something that the Commission asked for in particular with Channel Islands monitoring. This will help implement a plan developed with stakeholder input and advice. And with that, I'm happy to receive questions. And again, we will be providing you with our next update at your August meeting to give you the mid-season report on monitoring at the Channel Islands.
Any questions or comments from the Commission? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Weakland?
Paul, I'm gonna ask you ahead of time. Don't be repetitious about the same thing you are every time you come here. I'm gonna ask Clint and Nancy to help me stop.
We have a new commissioner. I hope Mr. Rogers has done his homework and he's heard it all before.
No.
Commissioner's Paul Weakland. Arnold says that it's not a revenue problem, it's a spending problem. Now, in 1870, the fishermen of the state of California came to the legislature and asked for a fish commission to preserve the resources for future generations, to make sure there will never be any overfishing in California. That has not happened. The fishermen in California since 1870 have had to abide by laws and regulations of their fishing conduct. The fishing in California has only been done under strict government code, laws, and regulations. How could there be overfishing? There are other tools that can be used instead of marine protected areas, such as bag limits, size limits, seasons, and gear restrictions. On the Central Coast Studies, the MLPA, marine protected areas. In California, we have the oldest marine protected areas of anywhere in the world. In California, we have the most marine protected areas of anywhere in the world. In California, we have the largest marine protected areas of anywhere in the world. What we don't have is any convincing evidence of any value or worth of the marine protected area. How does closing an area to fishing protect the resource from things like mismanagement, lack of enforcement, storms or environmental changes, pollution, oil spills, urban and agricultural runoff, failed federal policies like the overpopulation of seals and sea lions, another failed federal policy, otters outside their containment area, unethical researchers that are grant-sucking parasites that need crisis so they can get more grant money? How does closing an area to fishing prevent the introduction of diseases like withering syndrome? How does closing an area to fishing prevent predators or all non-native and native predators? Mismanagement like the moratorium on capazons. Capazon, 90% of a capazon's diet is abalone. So if you allow the capazons to overpopulate, guess what they're doing to the abalone population? They're devouring it. Now, how does closing an area to fishing prevent destruction of habitat by military operations or construction projects like power plants, dredging? The one thing that's big in the marine protected areas is there is no criteria for failure. There is no way to judge, gauge, or evaluate the failure of these areas. They are not doing what they're advertised. It's a real shame that in California, the ROV, I mean, this has no value or worth as a study for wildlife, especially in the marine environment. It's like your ROV is like having a large tractor going through a field. Everything runs. And that stuff ain't sticking around. Whoa, get out of here. And when a fish does stop and looks at this thing, it's like when a deer gets caught in the headlights. It's of no value or worth to us. It's a failed policy. All it does is suck up funds, and it's not what California needs. What we need is honest evaluation. Unlike some of the Marine Region staff that we've already seen, would rather their opinion weigh heavily than scientific evidence. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. We look forward to your comments on the draft master plan.
I guess that brings us to item 8, which is commission informational items. There's been no marine subcommittee meetings since that subcommittee has been vacated recently. So the next item is a report from the Altauscher Policy Advisory Committee meeting.
I'm sure Michael wants to report on that.
Well, I think Mike and then also Phil, I believe, will be making a report.
Okay. Go ahead, Phil.
Mr. Commissioners, I can't say and ladies anymore. That's too bad. I'm a representative of the National Wild Turkey Federation. I'm the California State Chapter President, but today my duties are to report as a member of the subcommittee of the Altauscher Committee. And we have had our legislative branch, which is Mr. Bill Gaines. I'm sure you're all familiar with Bill.
It wasn't me.
That's kind of how we feel on some of this legislation, too. So it kind of apropos on this. And so I'm here to basically read the report that we submitted to Mr. Kellogg, Commissioner Kellogg, and I'll read the report at this time. On March 10th, the meeting of the Altauscher Committee reviewed several bills recently introduced to the state legislature that are of interest to California hunting and fishing community. Following detailed discussion, the committee unanimously voted to recommend to the Fish and Game Commission that they take the positions on the following three bills that are interest of concern to us. And the first bill we'll address is AB 996, which is Ridley Thomas. And this bill purports to the ammunition bill. Storage and sale of ammunition would authorize the Department of Justice to adopt regulations governing the safe storage and sale of ammunition. This bill would facilitate the imposition of new regulations on ammunition vendors, hunters, and other gun owners without proper legislative deliberation. New and increased fees, which always comes along with these things, would be likely. And we strongly take the position of opposing this bill. And that was bill number AB 996. The second bill is Senate Bill 1028 by Bowen. And this is hunting. And this is the, I'm sure you've read the, saw the articles in recent newspapers, and as a hunter, I particularly don't say this is hunting. And so this bill is related to the computer-assisted remote hunting. This bill would make it unlawful for any person to take birds or mammals located in both state and out of state by means of computer-assisted remote hunting. Would also make it unlawful to establish or operate a computer-assisted remote hunting site in California for the purpose of permitting taking any game, bird, or mammal. This bill would help to properly maintain the tradition of hunting as a hands-on experience, and so we support this bill 100% as outdoorsmen and hunters. And the third bill is Senate Bill 1029 by Hollingsworth, and this is a special interest license plate bill that would allow us to have sportsmen's license plates. Would require the Department of Motor Vehicle to issue a sports person, and you notice I said sports person, special interest license plate, and require the additional fees collected from the issuance of these license plates be deposited in the Fish and Game Preservation Fund for expenditures on various wildlife and fishery-related items. This bill would supplement existing conservation programs and many of the benefit to game species and hunting and fishing opportunities within the state. We strongly recommend that the commission take a stand because these bills are coming before the legislation in the very, very near future. Thank you. And this report was submitted by Bill Gaines, and I'm thankful that we can address you.
Thank you.
Mike and I both sit on this Altasha committee, but I haven't been able to make the last couple of meetings, and Mike may want to add to what Phil shared. Or
well, in addition to what Phil had to, I'll just summarize our meeting. We are actually going through a little bit of a transition. We're trying to reorganize the way we do Altasha. For Mr. Rogers' sake, Altasha is a subcommittee that's comprised of conservation organizations such as Turkey Federation, Trout Unlimited, United Anglers. It also includes Farm Bureau, Cattlemen's Association, and the Altasha Policy Advisory Committee makes recommendations to us, and we either choose to adopt them, maybe ask the department to move legislatively. Actually, a couple years ago, we got the SHARE program out of that, and that's what we're working on right now, to open up public lands, private lands publicly through some sort of monetary incentive program. We had a very good meeting, very well-attended meeting, I think a much better organized meeting, and now that we have subcommittees that meet the day before, they then bring forward their issues, brief the whole committee, and the committee then makes a decision as to whether to support or move that recommendation forward. We also assign new committee chairs and assigned every individual to sit on a committee. So it's, going to be much, much better, much more efficient in the future. These bills were brought up in the we have a legislative committee, and these bills were brought forward amongst a few others, the committee felt strongly that these bills they are going to take a position on, and they ask that the commission adopt the same position as the Altasha. And we have done that in the past, specifically the bills to ban dove hunting and to ban use of dogs while bear hunting, of which I testify against. So there's precedent here.
Hey, what's the pleasure of the commission with regard to the request from the advisory committee? I'll make a motion that we go on record in opposing AB 996 and supporting SB 1028 and SB 1029.
I'll second that.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Ayes have it, and that'll be the order.
I have one question, just I don't want to get into it again, but this whole computer hunting thing, doesn't that have to fly in the face of all of our regulations too? I mean, someone wouldn't need a license, do they have to have a license to go computer hunting?
It's
really?
Just that you do it via computer and you harvest it, the animal, and then
it's really crazy to me.
Prep it and then send it to you.
So I know I saw things on ABC News and it's become a big deal. Do we need to regulate this, or is it all up to the state legislature? Do we need to look at this more? Because it's becoming a new thing.
This will take care of that.
Okay. Just checking. Thank you.
Also, I think it exists only in states. Does it not become a...
Go ahead.
It exists only in states where you can get a license by the computer. And we can't.
You can't. I know.
Not yet.
We're getting there. Good for you.
Yeah, but we won't want one to trigger the other. We don't want getting a license and then allowing computer hunting. So that way, yeah. Okay.
Rich.
Okay.
Rich, Paul's fairly new too, and we've heard almost there for a long time on this computer.
I have hunting and a fishing license sitting here. We're not on the internet.
Just a little fun, Paul. Donkey.
Just since you brought it up, I'm not promising any dates, but we made a significant move forward by getting permission to go and put the RFP out. So
that's a big
we are now actively taking proposals, which was a huge step for us. So
yeah. Good.
I'm not saying it's going to happen. It's moving, though.
Go ahead, Rich.
From my relatively uninformed, new kid on the block perspective, I really applaud that. It seems to me that long-term, the information that we can derive from such a system is profound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is. Absolutely. We need this.
Absolutely.
We need this so bad it's not even funny.
Yep.
I agree.
And I was joking a little bit there, but Sankey's wanted this more than anybody in the room, I think, for a long time.
Well,
I don't know about that.
We all want it.
I've been here since the beginning.
Bob, look.
In the beginning.
In the beginning of time.
Yeah. Four score.
That's good.
Anything else on this?
Saki, was there anything I missed out of Altasha? I think it covered all of them.
Yeah, just from a departmental, we're one of the participants in the Altasha subcommittee, and the department was very impressed and pleased with kind of the focus we're able to start bringing to some of the issues, and I really start seeing some legitimate, very useful things starting to come out of the committee, and also providing the department some very, I mean, we had some great ideas come up in the committee, particularly on the junior camps issues. We're already discussing ways to help facilitate that. So, and we can actually help make that happen.
Yeah, one of the things that all of our, NWTF has a camp, Quell Unlimited has a camp, CWA has a camp, and what I charged them with was to get together and collectively figure out a way that we could have a joint camp, one maybe in Northern California, one in Southern California, and that brings all the organizations under one umbrella so they can all make their presentations about what they do, and like Mule Deer Foundation, Deer Association, those folks, elk, and the like. So, and, you know, the department will work cooperatively with them, and I told them I could find some ranches for them, and so they're going to move forward on that, and I think it'll be a good thing.
Commissioner Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. President. Having served on the Fish and Game Commission for just a moment, but the Forestry Commission for a long time, 6 years, and I chaired both the Resource Protection Committee and then, for a long period of time, the Forest Practice Committee. We got a lot of business done offline that way, and we're able to bring it back to the, in that sense, it's a board, but in this sense, of the commission. I strongly affirm doing these things in these committees, because you can get an awful lot done offline, bring it back to the full board of the commission,
exactly.
and then give a good, strong report, and if anybody's got any questions, we can take care of that then, and then move forward. I think you can get a lot much more done doing that. I like it.
That sounds almost like a nomination speech for the new chair of the new Marine Subcommittee, but we'll talk about that later.
Exactly.
Oh, June 16th will be our next meeting, and then I'd like to tip my hat to Bob and Adriana for doing good work and helping make us streamline the committee.
16. For what?
Mr. Strickland, you are now on the fishing committee.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, next item.
There's no updates from staff, so the next item is the federal agency informational items. There's no federal agencies here to provide updates. Commission legal counsel update, and he said he had none. And there's really no need for an executive session. I'll just point out, though, that this last week we have received a writ from the Center for Biological Diversity suing the commission over the tiger salamander petition. And that was filed in Sacramento Superior Court, so Mr. Cunningham may be assigned to that.
The answer is I will.
You will be, okay.
I'm the lucky holder.
Anything else we need to bring up at this time?
I think we'll recess until 8 o'clock tomorrow morning.
8:30.
8:30.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Where is the commission meeting in March? In the March?
Sacramento.
March.
No, this is March.
May.
No. Sacramento.
I have one down for the 31st of March and the 1st of April. Is that not?
right?
No, that was changed December to this meeting.
Okay. Great.
And the next meeting is May 3rd, 4th, 5th, right?
Correct. And we want everybody to attend the joint meeting with the Board of Forestry and support your new commissioner when he goes back home.
There's actually still one member, Theron Odell, on the board. With whom I serve. Great guy.
Yes.
Okay. Strong.
We're recessed.
We're recessed till tomorrow.
Great. When are we going to have a